नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
कानि सर्वाणि संयम्य युक्त आसीत मत्परः वशे हि यस्येन्द्रियाणि तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता।
Please respond. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence.
Dhyayato viṣayān puṃsaḥ saṅghasteṣu pajāyate saṅghāt saṅjāyate kāmaḥ kāmāt krodho vijāyate.
While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment lust develops, and from lust anger arises.
Krodhat bhavati sammohah sammohat smriti vibhramah smriti bhramshat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati.
From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool.
ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्यज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुःवन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
आराध्य भगवान् व्रजेशतनयस्तद्धाम वृन्दावनं रम्याकाचिदुपासना व्रजवधूवर्गे नपाकल्पिता श्रीमद्भागवतं प्रमाणममलं प्रेम पुमतो महान् श्रीचैतन्यमहाप्रभोर्मतमिदं तत्रा धरानां परः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे
हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण। सो वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू फॉर दिस मंडे प्रोग्राम। सम ऑफ यू मे बी कमिंग फॉर द फर्स्ट टाइम टुडे। हू आर कमिंग फॉर द फर्स्ट टाइम? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You come there also, isn't it? Okay. So in the past few classes, we have been discussing on the topic of who is a self-realized person. That was a topic which has been going on for many classes. Arjuna is putting this question to Krishna. Who is a sthita prajna? Prajna means intelligence. One who is very intelligent is called as prajna. Sthita prajna means who is a man who is fixed in complete intelligence. That is the question. So Krishna says many things. We were discussing in the past weeks how such a person is devoid of all desires, which we explained. How can one become free from all desire? Anybody remembers what we discussed in the previous class? took it, and when he came to know what had happened, he became so annoyed that he started shouting at the top of his lungs. He shouted so loudly and pounded on the table, and everyone was clinging to their chairs, looking at one another with their hindsides. See, just the CEO is really upset. They were all like, you know, shivering. And he was closing his eyes and pounding repeatedly and shouting and bellowing at the top of his lungs. And nobody could tolerate it. And he's a CEO, who can tell anything against him? So things like that happen in our life also, isn't it? It's not only we can laugh at other people, we also sometimes lose our control. So sir, suddenly later we regret with guilt. How nice it would have been if I didn't behave like that later on. So that also is actually anger, manifestation of anger. So what is that situation? Like for example, if they have made a sweet at home, everyone will get 2 gulab jamuns, and then you want 4, then it's a difficult situation, isn't it? If already it's over, and it is exactly made it 2 per head, then you can't have one more without troubling others, isn't it? Or you have to tell somebody else, today you do puas, I will have. Today you avoid sweets. Then self-control is essential, isn't it? So self-control is essential in many respects. Like you see in a classroom atmosphere, the teacher tells the children, my dear children, today, the class is generally over at 5 o'clock, but I am leaving all of you at 4:30 today, so that you all will have enough time for your homework. So you finish your homework in the school only, and then peacefully you all can go out to the class. And she says like this and she moves out. What do you think will happen? Do you think children are going to faithfully sit and do their homework? Immediately you will find them whistling and throwing rockets, you know, pounding on the table, and they will, everyone will run out. Isn't it? Because they know self-control. Actually, we struggle so hard to train the children to get a discipline. But we are no less in not having control. We also have a problem of controlling ourselves. So here Krishna is talking about a Siddha Prajna who has complete control of his mind and senses. A very controlled person. Like today we were discussing this verse which we are talking just now. He says, one who restrains his senses in keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, he is known as a man of steady intelligence. The second verse from the bottom in that page. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Now I was giving you some examples where all of you agreed that we need to have a control so that we behave in a gentlemanly way with everyone. So we don't earn a bad name, or we don't lose a good image, or we don't break relationships with other near and dear ones. So we have great concern for these things. But when Krishna talks here in Bhagavad Gita about self-control, it is for a very high purpose. It is not only to have a happy living in this world, but here Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in one of the verses he says, Shaknoti haiva yasodam prakshareera vimokshanan kama krodhot bhavam vegam sayukta sukhi naraha. He is saying, one who has controlled this kama krodhot bhavam vegam. Kama means lust and krodha is anger. Krodhot bhavam vegam, that vega is the great force. So one who can control this formidable internal enemies, not just subdue them, but sublimate them, and such a person, up to the point of death, if he is free from these kind of urges, and he focuses his mind on God completely, with an undisturbed mind, such a person, at the time of death, will leave this body, leave this world forever, for good, and he will return back home, back to Godhead. He will achieve the kingdom of God. That's what Krishna says. So, all of us originally belong to the kingdom of God. Like the Paradise Lost says, that we lost that eternal kingdom of God, and we have come here because of these things only. Because of krodha, kama and lobha, greed and all these things. So now we have to give up these coverings and become pure and again elevate ourselves to the same situation. For that purpose we want to control this urges. The highest purpose. See, everyone in this world wants freedom, isn't it? We all want freedom. Freedom, people think that I will have more freedom if I have more money, and if I have more luxuries and more facilities. I don't have to walk, I can have a bike or I can have a car. Or I don't have to, you know, take any trouble, I can have a mobile instead of an ordinary phone. So these things give you more freedom, isn't it? More freedom in what respect? That it gives you more comfort instead of having to take any trouble like that. Whereas, real freedom is achieved when one becomes free from these internal enemies. Actually, if you don't become free from the internal enemies, you will see that you are surrounded by all facilities, but you are still not happy. You cannot be happy. Just imagine, someone wanted to achieve something, he got it, but then they are still hankering for something else. We all have experience of this, isn't it? Like, you know, you had a target here. By the time you achieve that, the target has moved to something else. By the time you achieve this, it goes higher like that. It's a moving target. It doesn't stay anywhere. And that's the nature of this world. So because of that, the hankering goes on increasing. That means if somebody can give you a medicine for hankering, any doctor has it? Anybody has it? So we have to come to Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is the doctor for Arjuna. And Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita how one can become free from hankering and achieve complete satisfaction. So, like, you know, a king was told by a sadhu, by a saintly person. The king was hankering like anything in his life. He was lamenting. These two things go hand in hand. Hankering and lamentation. You can experience that whenever you have hankering for anything, ask yourself. You had hankering for achieving something in life, you will always have lamentation. They never are separated. Like if you hanker for something and you get it, then still there is lamentation. Why? Because there is fear of losing it. Or if you don't get it, then you are hankering to achieve it. So these two things go. I am not giving an example for this because you all can think of your own examples in mind. We will see that. So the sadhu told the king, you are suffering now, my dear king, despite having so many ministers and so many golden chariots and so many elephants and horses and so many praja saluting you every morning. Still you are suffering because of this disease, hankering and lamentation. Then king said, tell me, what is the solution to this? Then the sadhu said, you should get the shirt of the happiest man in your kingdom and you wear it, then you will also become happy. He said, that's it. It's not a very difficult thing. Then he called for the minister and asked him to make announcements all over the country. Go and search for the happiest man and bring his shirt to me. Then they went, they played the drums and everything and the kettle drums and everything. They called for people and everyone had some problem or the other. Nobody claimed to be completely happy. And they couldn't find one. They were searching practically all day. Several days they were searching. At last they arrived at a place where there was a sadhu under a tree. And then sadhu said, I am completely satisfied in life. I am completely happy. And I have nothing to achieve in life. Already God is so kind. He is taking care of me completely. He is giving me all protection. And he said, then the minister said, okay, come, king has called you. They went to the king, where is your shirt? Bring your shirt. He said, I don't wear any shirt. That's why the sadhu put him in a puzzle like this. The sadhu had noticed, he was very simple. Very simple. So the king learnt from the saintly person that even after having all material facilities, I am like a fish out of water with all facilities around me. You give a fish out of water anything, he will never be happy. You can give him a mobile, give him a car, give him a bungalow, give him money, give him magazines. You give him all facilities, he will be just shivering to, you know, go back to water. Similarly, all of us, in whether we are poor or we are rich, what we need is the company of God in our life. When you include him in our life, then we can be happy. So in company of God, Krishna says, only can one control his senses. Like here he is saying, it's called as a two-point formula, this shloka. He says two things. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me. One should do two things we should do. On one hand, we have to restrain our senses. How? That was explained some verses ago, where Krishna said, one should restrain the senses exactly like a tortoise. Kurumbongani vasarvashaka. Yadasam harate chayam, kurumbongani vasarvashaka. If you see a tortoise withdraws the hands, withdraws the legs and the head also into the, what do you call this? Shell, yeah, shell. So when an enemy comes, when an enemy hits him on the back, nothing happens to the tortoise. Because it's very hard on the back. Similarly, Krishna said earlier that as soon as you see anything that is detrimental to your spiritual growth, at once you withdraw your senses. Like sometimes they give some techniques in your the management books and all. When you get angry, immediately count 1 to 10. No? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No? So forget the anger, they say. But this kind of tricks don't work. After finishing 10, you will get still angry. You will say it's not gone. Sometimes even after expressing anger, you already expressed it. You know, it's already done. Then somebody brings you a cup of water, you drink it. Again you will start. You've seen that? They start like that. Huh? It's like glowing fire. Flame like a flame. Have you all experienced all this? So it's very difficult to control. Simply counting 1 to 10 doesn't help. That's why Krishna says here, of course, when you say withdraw the senses, how are you going to withdraw it? Like I was telling in that class that time, that when you see some nasty, obscene picture, close your eyes. Just like the three monkeys you all know, isn't it? Close your eyes. Yeah. Don't see bad things, don't speak bad things, don't hear bad things. So we can do that. But still it is very difficult. Although Krishna says withdraw senses, okay, you withdraw. But then you will feel that, unfortunately missed the opportunity. One may feel like that. Such a golden opportunity, I missed it. So, because we don't have a higher taste. If you have a higher taste, like, you know, if you are experiencing somebody, like you have a gulab jamun, you are eating gulab jamun, somebody gives a dry roti, that one is very attractive to you. So, we have to experience a higher taste like that, spiritual taste. Then the lower taste will become insignificant like that. So, restraining the senses is not easy, as we studied in the previous verse, without a higher taste. I was giving the example of a diseased person having a diabetes. And he's a jamindar. Daughter told him that you cannot touch elephants or mangoes. But he had an orchard of mangoes. The mangoes would come to his house in sacks. So every time when he would see the servants carrying the sacks of elephants and mangoes inside his bungalow, the smell will come. Now you see, my God, so many mangoes are going, and I am in my orchard, I am producing so many mangoes, but I cannot eat. A doctor has told him, if you eat the mangoes, you will die. And he goes and, you know, he just smells the mangoes and keeps it and goes away. But how long can he do that? One day he will succumb to eating them. Similarly, our senses also drag us down sometime or the other. That's why Krishna is saying here, one who restrains senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me. That's very important. Without fixing consciousness upon Krishna, it is not possible for one to be controlled in mind and senses. Here in the purport to this, Prabhupada is writing here an interesting point. Then one of the purports here is saying, if they are not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. In the material world, everyone, including Lord Shiva and Brahma, to say nothing of other demigods in the heavenly planets, is subjected to the influence of sense objects. And the only method to get out of this puzzle of material existence is to become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada is calling this material world as a puzzle. Why is calling it as a puzzle? Sometimes you see in a maze, you all know what is a maze. Sometimes they put a rat on one side, you know, and they put some bread on the other side, and they tell you to, you know, find out the route, how the rat can find out that bread. So while going through the maze, often you get stuck up. Similarly, in this world also, in our endeavor to achieve happiness, we are often stuck up. You will see that. Like it appears the goal is clear, you go some distance and you get stuck up there. And you find that what you thought will give you happiness is exactly giving the opposite. You will see that. And then you think, probably I was wrong. I'll take another direction. Then you go on the other side. So it's like that. You go round and round and round. It's like a Ferris wheel. Sometimes you end up nowhere. You're going and you don't know the goal of life. Where is my life leading me to? So Krishna is giving us a clue here for the first time here in this chapter. That yukta asita mat paraha, he is saying. One should fix his intelligence in me. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita mat paraha. So he's giving a clue that you will find solution to all your problems when you become my devotee. Till then, artificially restraining your senses won't help. A practical example is that of Ajamila. Ajamila, he was a Brahmin by birth. Once his father told him to go to the forest and pluck some flowers and come. So this Ajamila was not ordinary person. As a Brahmin, he was having many good qualities. It is said that he always respected the elders. He never disrespected them. And he was always polite in behavior, very gentle. He took bath twice, thrice a day. He was very clean externally also. He used to recite the Vedic mantras. And he had a chaste wife also. He was married. And he was performing all regular activities, fulfilling all his duties. And one day when his father told him to go and pluck some flowers and come, then he went to pluck the flowers. In the forest while walking, he came across a Shudra and a Shudrani, low class prostitute and a low class man embracing one another. He saw this sight. They were actually smiling at one another. When he saw this sight, his mind became agitated. So he tried to think of the scriptures, he tried to think of some shlokas, but nothing was of any avail. His mind became more and more agitated. Prabhupada is writing that how in the modern times, not just one or two, there are so many hundreds and thousands of Ajamilas faced with similar situation. Wherever you go, you find the same thing in posters and movies and advertisements, wherever you turn around. So our mind can become easily polluted. According to Shastra, one who wants to achieve God, he or she has to be extremely pure. In order to enter fire, we have to be like fire, isn't it? If you are not fire, what will happen? Then we will be burnt. So in order to enter into fire, we have to be like fire. Similarly, if you have to enter the kingdom of God, it's a supremely pure place. So we have to also become pure completely. But these kind of allurements that are offered by this world, they agitate the mind, especially when one is in adolescent age. When you know adolescent age, and it goes for many, many years like that. So mind can become polluted. That's why we were saying one should not see bad sights, but then one gets to see. Ajamila never intended to see that, but he got to see, and he could not withdraw his mind. And he wasn't a devotee. He had done some very little devotion service long ago. Now he had no touch with devotion service. And now when he went back home, repeatedly the thought came. Now we will see the next verse, based on that we can understand this Ajamila's life. See the next verse. Dhyayato Vishyan Pumsa, Krishna says, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. And from lust, anger arises. Here Krishna gives a step-by-step analysis of what exactly happens in our life. Like for example, sometimes you go with your children in the train or in the market, you know. So in order to attract the children, cone ice cream, you know what they do? Tin dun 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 dun, some sound he makes. You know? And immediately the children, when they hear the sound, they find out where the sound is coming from. That's the first. So our senses get attracted first. And then they look there. And then what do they find? There is cone ice cream. And he's filling up the cone ice cream, and they keep on seeing. He takes one cone from here and the cream from here puts inside. They keep watching. That's contemplating. When they constantly contemplate, dhyayato means first their eyes goes and gets stuck up there. And then what they do? Sangha steshu pajayate. Sangha means they are associating with that cone ice cream. They are saying that, oh, I am the first person to buy. Many are buying. See, all the children are coming, paying something and taking. So we have to give 1 rupee, it seems, and then you are given a cone ice cream. Very nice. And then papa or mama, you know, immediately. I also want that. Sangha steshu pajayate. The second sangha comes. And then after sangha, sangat sanjayate kamaha. Then the lust comes. Then the parents say, hey, no, it's not good for you. You know, it will spoil your throat. You have already got tonsils and all. And the child says, nothing doing. You wave his hands and legs, you know. I really want that. You have to give me. If you don't give me, you just leave your hand. I just want to sit on the road and cry. That is lust. Lust means I want this and nothing else. It's like Ravana. Ravana was given so much good advice. Vinash Kale, Prita Buddhi. He didn't have good intelligence. When lust comes and attacks our heart, we really go crazy. In fact, when lust or anger comes, then intelligence says goodbye and slips away from our mind. You can see that there is no intelligence. After that, a person may do any type of nonsense. He may even jump from a 10-story building, or he may even commit suicide or whatever. Similarly, the child, when he sees ice cream, he gets lusty. Then he wants to have it somewhere or other. Then, when he gets that and eats it, he may spoil his throat. If he doesn't get that, he gets hankering and frustration. Subsequently, all these things come like that. That's why he says, what happens after lust? Kamat krodho vijayate, then the child becomes angry, isn't it? He starts crying and making a big drama in order to get that. And then from anger, complete delusion arises. He doesn't even behave with parents properly. You won't give me, he starts slapping the parents in the face or something. You've seen some children doing that? You are going to give me or not, I'll put my hand into your pocket and take the money out. They may behave like that. Sometimes parents, children, they pull the dhoti or pant or tear the shirt also, isn't it? That is actually delusion. See, from anger, complete delusion arises. Delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost and one falls down the material pool. Then one becomes very, very much foolish, like an animal, like that. Same thing happened with Ajamila also. Ajamila, first he contemplated on that side. And then what happened? Sangat sanjayate kamaha. So this sangha is the most dangerous thing, bad sangha, dussangha. Most dangerous thing in this world. Shripad Shankaracharya says, in his Bhajagovindam, he says that, satsangatvat nissangatvam, nissangatvat nirmohatvam, nirmohatvat nishchalatatvam, nishchalatatvat jivanmukti. He says, satsangatvat nissangatve. He says, why if you go to satsanga, like today we all are assembling for a satsanga here, what happens? The nissangatvam. You can easily avoid bad association. If you are not here, probably your friend will pull you to a movie, or in a comfort movie, isn't it? And then you go and see a movie, then you develop more attachment to wrong things. But when you go to satsanga, what happens? Nissangatvam. You can easily escape from bad association. And then nissangatva, nirmohatvam. Nirmohatvam means you become free from the moha. Moha means illusions. And then nirmohatvam, nishchalatatvam. Then the nishchalatatva, God becomes very crystal clear in your mind. And you can easily take a shelter. And then nishchalatatva, jivanmukti. Then one can be liberated from all this animalistic propensities. Things which make us become two-legged animals. So the first stage in our spiritual life is to have a desire to gain self-control. If somebody is asking why we need all this control, why not enjoy? What happens when we enjoy? Who can say? What happens when you don't care for any sense control? You just go according to the nature your senses are dragging you. What do you think will happen? Just imagine we are making announcement all over the world. For the next 5 minutes, everyone in this world can do anything they want. Not caring for any rules, regulations, you can break anything you want. And next 5 minutes, everyone is given freedom. What do you think people will do? People will go crazy, insane. Because there is law and order in society. And there is also law and order given in the scriptures. Like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and all. And by following this law and order only, one can be peaceful, isn't it? Imagine if one doesn't follow the rules, regulations and injunctions given in scripture, then there will be terrible, terrible confusion. Like for example, in the Shastras it is said that because we have imperfect senses, we don't know what is good for us, what is bad for us. We don't know. Just like for example, somebody even brings wine, for example, from a distance it smells, isn't it? The smell may be very nice. Even people like petrol smell. Is it good? You all have got the petrol smell? Sometimes it's nice, isn't it? Some people enjoy it. But it is very deadly for the body. Similarly, wine smell also. Smell is very nice. And one may even drink it also. Then in the long run, immediately it's very pleasurable. But in the long run, it causes damage. So that is also coming from grapes. When you put the grapes underground for a long period of time, fermentation, everything. But somebody gives you a grape juice. That is good for our nourishment, isn't it? So we should know what is good and what is not. We have to clearly know what is consumable, what is fit for consumption, and what cannot be consumed, we should know. You see, bitter gourd juice. How many of you like bitter gourd juice? Nobody likes it, but it is very good. If you see Ayurveda will say regularly you should drink bitter gourd, at least once in 2 weeks. It's very nice if one takes a cup of bitter gourd juice. But if you know it's good, then one may consume it like that. So, first of all, we have to know that not controlling our mind and senses will lead us to a dangerous, bottomless hole. We have to be aware of it. So one should be convinced of this fact that yes, I need to control my mind and senses. That's the first step. If one is convinced, then one can go ahead. Then Krishna tells whether how to do that. And Ajamila, you know what happened to Ajamila? When Ajamila was watching like this, he understood it's a bad sight to see. And then they were laughing at one another shamelessly. embracing like this. Then he went home and called for this prostitute to his home to become a maidservant. And he drove off his chaste wife from home. And he kept this prostitute at home as a wife. And then she married her and begot 10 children in the womb of the prostitute, one after another. And he led a very sinful life, just as it is said here, anger. Because the prostitute was demanding so many things that he could not satisfy her very easily. And in order to keep her happy, he had to even do murder. He had to steal. He had to rob off. He became a highway robber. He was stealing from everyone, looting and killing. All kinds of sinful acts he did. And then in this way he satisfied his wife. And the last child he gave the name Narayana. Due to which he was calling Narayana, Narayana, Narayana all the time. And the time of his death, when he was about to die, when the Yamadutas were supposed to come and take him out of his body and punish him thoroughly in hell, he was saved because he called out Narayana. And of course he was given a second opportunity to worship Narayana and become a devotee later. So, in this way, the main part of the story that is of interest to us today is this. Sangasteshu Pajayate. Because he was doing associating with that bad side. So you have to know which are the things I should focus my mind upon and which are the things I should withdraw immediately. As if you have touched fire, like that you should remove your mind. Sometimes people get into internet, they're writing email and nowadays you go into Yahoo, if you go, you cannot avoid seeing one nasty picture at least. So many advertisements. And they're all so half nude and everything. And there are pornographic sites which people access and they completely deteriorate the intelligence of man. When one sees those sites, then one becomes bewildered. If one is not married, then one cannot maintain one's composure. Then one may indulge in illicit sex. Or if one is married, one may want more than one wife, or one may want to indulge in wrong practices with other women, and which can bring about downfall of the whole family. The whole family is shattered to pieces by such wrong indulgence. There are many big jamindars and big people in our country who, even at the age of 60 or 70, were not satisfied with one wife. So, he is 60 and his wife is 50, 52, and then he is going for a girl who is 20 or 22, and he is after her, and that girl will completely, extract all the money, from him in the name of giving her company. She will completely make this person a bondi, bankrupt. Like that. And the whole family is shattered to pieces. Like that. So, one has to, whenever we come across dussanga, what should we do? We should immediately withdraw ourselves, just like as if we have touched fire. And we should know that. First of all, we have to be convinced of that I don't need bad association. It's not good for me. Because you will see that, when you come to this class, you feel like coming again. You are inspired. But when you go back to your materialistic friends, what do you feel? You feel like becoming like them. So it's like, just like the water is pure, if it touches red color sand, it becomes red. If it touches black sand, it becomes black. Similarly, jaisa sang, vaisa rang, it is said. Depending on your association, you will become. If you go to good people, you will become good. That's what Chanakya says, is a very interesting verse. All of you can repeat after me, it's a very simple verse. Tyaja durjana samsargam bhaja sadhu samagamam kuru punyam ahoratram smaranityam anityatam. He is saying tyaja durjana samsargam. Durjana, who are durjana? Bad company. Tyaja durjana samsargam. Give up the bad company. Bhaja sadhu samagamam. Bhaja means glorify the name of God in the company of saintly people, like all devotees assembled here. Bhaja sadhu samagamam, in assembly. Kuru punya mahoratram, day and night, accumulate spiritual credits, pious credits, punya. Do good activities, like rising early in the morning, chanting the names of God, worshipping Him, bowing down to Him, offering boga to Him, offering garland to Him, celebrating festivals. Do all these things. Kuru punya mahoratram. Smaranitya manityatam. Always remember this body is perishable. The body is going to perish one day. It's not going to last forever. The body promises so many pleasures now, but how long is it going to last? Or even the pleasures, how long will they last? Pleasures will not last for a long time. In youth, you get a lot of pleasures. But then when you become an old man, when you're 60, 70, 80, what pleasures can you enjoy? You cannot eat well, you cannot sleep well, you cannot enjoy life. You can't do much. Even in this life, even when you are alive, you can't enjoy much. So remember that this life is short, smaranityam, anityatam. And understand that you are not the body, you are the soul. Anytime you have to leave this body, cast this aside. It's a mortal coil. And when the soul comes out, what you did, how you lived your life, that will determine your future life. What body are we going to get? So one should be very intelligent. That's why it says sangasteshu pajayate sangha. So the contemplation is the first step. So we should avoid dwelling and contemplating on wrong things. Our mind has a habit that when you hear some bad thing or see some bad thing, that lingers in your mind for a longer period of time than the good things that you hear. Huh? You agree with me? All of you, isn't it? Good thing you hear, it as if it goes like this and phew, out, phew, like this. It just goes up. You don't know. Sometimes after finishing lecture, we ask people, what did I speak today? I understood everything, but don't ask me anything. You know, people fear to speak one word or one sentence. But then if somebody is cracking a sex joke, or somebody is showing some nasty picture, that gets imprinted. And probably till death, the person will not forget it. Just gets stuck up in the mind, like a ink, you know, stuck up in a cloth, which you cannot wash even after putting super rain. So it doesn't go. Surf or super rain, you put still the... Sometimes you've seen the ink or something. You need to bring lemon. Lemon, I think you have to... Yeah, in pocket, yeah. You have to bring lemon or something to remove it. Huh? Very tough. Similarly, bad things get stuck up in our heart. And good things, very difficult to enter. You may wonder, why is it so? Why is it like that? The reason is simple. We have been in this world for millions of lifetimes, in different bodies, doing different bad things and suffering terribly. And we have the sangha of those, bad sangha of those things. And now we have come, after long journey in this material world, we have come to this point where we have come across devotees and we are hearing about God. So it's a, you know, it appears sometimes difficult for us to progress very fastly here, because the old Purva Vasanas are there. Purva Vasanas and Sanskaras are still there. So they are constantly dragging us down, pulling us down. But if we continue coming, as he says here, Yukta Asita Matparaha. If one takes shelter of Krishna, what happens? And gradually those old things can be wiped out. At least we should want to wipe them out. That's very important. If we think that those are very nice, then nobody can help us. If somebody says, no, you know, doing all these nonsensical activities is all right. Somebody says, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong with seeing blue films? What's wrong with having illicit connection with many women? What's wrong with smoking? What's wrong with drinking? What's wrong with you know, living a free life? You know, why to worry about all these things? They can live, but such a life actually does not lead to any happiness. Who can understand that? Only a person who is in a higher platform can understand that. You have seen the camel? Camel is eating the cactus. No matter how much the camel is imagining that the cactus is soft and everything, it is of course soft, but it has also got a thorn. The thorn will tear the gums and the blood will ooze out and the camel will drink his own blood, imagining that to be the hot juice of the cactus. Like that, a person who indulges in these things is actually torturing himself, imagining that I am happy. It's like that. Simply a figment of imagination. So one, just like I saw a boy in our college. Whenever the results would come, there's a liquor shop next to our college. All the boys would go there and drink and they'd be lying there. I saw a boy lying near a gutter. I felt very sorry. I was probably the only one who went to wake him up. And everyone else went away. This fellow, I asked him, why are you suffering like this? He said, what do you mean? Who said I'm suffering? I'm happy, he said. And then I tried to give him my hand and wake him up. He couldn't even stand up. Waving and he fell on the ground again. And he was so heavily drunk that again he started catching his stomach and crying, ah, oh, he was shouting like anything. He was really feeling pain. I could understand that, because he was over drunk and, you know, his liver was in problem actually. And they called for a doctor and they picked him up and put him in a vehicle and took him. So he was crying, it was paining, but he didn't admit, because he had false ego and he couldn't admit. He said, I'm not suffering. And sometimes somebody may say, you know, he was suffering because, you know, he overdid it, that's why. If you are in moderate amounts, no problem. But then you will not remain moderate. That's the nature of the senses. The senses, you know, when will they be satisfied? Only when you become insane. At the time, they will be satisfied. Actually, they are not satisfied that, in that stage also. The senses will drive us to insanity. That's the nature of senses. They will drive us to insanity. Just like, how many of you have this experience? Sometimes some eatable is being served on the table. You ate little bit of it, it was so delicious that you could not control yourself. And you just ate it so much. Even after your stomach pained, you still couldn't stop it. Isn't it? Sometimes you know very well that your stomach is not in good condition and a particular item is not, doctor tells you that you should not eat. Still, what do? We think, anyway, now we'll put it inside. Later on, some jealousy or something will help. You know jealousy? Some digene or something. Yeah, Hajmala. Take something and that will do the work for me. You know, I have to have it. That is why I was telling, the senses will drive us to insanity. That's the nature of the senses. So, intelligent person asks himself, why should I allow myself to be driven to insanity? Why my senses, all my senses are pulling me in all different directions. They are torturing me. So, such a person, if he becomes a Krishna's devotee, then the senses will automatically come under control. So, Prabhupada gives this, in the purport, this famous verse of Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj was a great king. He was a householder. He had his ministers, his Raj Darbar. He had to maintain so many things. But he was a great Krishna's devotee. It is said every day he would personally take a cloth and clean the temple of Krishna with his hands. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayo vachams vaikunta gunanu varnane karau harer mandira marjanadi. So with his eyes he used to behold the beautiful forms of Shri Radha and Krishna, and with his ears he would hear shrutim chakara achyuta sat kathodaye. With his ears he would hear the Krishna katha, achyuta katha. He would hear like that. Mukunda Lingalaya Darshane Drisha, with his eyes he would see the deities. Tadbhruti Gatra Asparshenga Sangamam, with his hands he would touch the feet of the devotees and take the dust. And with his nose he would smell the flower that is offered to God. With his tongue he would eat the prasadam of the Lord. And in this way, and with the legs, Padav Hare Chetra Padana Sarpani, with his legs he would walk to the Hari Chetra, means the holy places. Use his legs for that. And Shiro Shikesha Padavi Mandane. You know the word, meaning of the word Rishikesha? It has a special significance. Rishik plus Isha. That is Rishikesha. Rishik means senses. Isha means master. Rishik Ish means, who is the Rishikesh? Krishna, who is the master of our senses. So, Shiro Rishikesha Padabhyamadana. He offered his head by bowing down in front of the deity of God. Before God. And by doing that, by doing all these activities, what happened to him? It says, kamam cha dasye natu kama kamya yatottama shloka gunashrayarathi. He conquered all his desires. There were no remnants of desires in his mind which was leading to hankering. He became completely satisfied. Can anyone say that I am completely satisfied? It's very difficult to find a satisfied man in this world. If you ask a person, how is everything going on in your life? Fine. But you say, I have these things to be still accomplished. We will all see that. We have a list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, first priority, second priority, third priority, fourth priority, we have many things like that. But to say that I am very satisfied is very difficult. But he was very satisfied because he was doing all these activities, purposes, engaging his senses. It says here, the senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of the devotional service to Krishna. As a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, or Krishna, situated in the heart of the yogi, devotee, burns up all kinds of impurities. So in this way, our heart becomes free from all impurities. That's why the hankering is also gone. The hankering and lamentation is gone because the heart becomes very, very pure. It becomes a residence of the Lord Himself when we do these activities. So these are practical for all the grihasthas to do. Like rising in the morning, chanting the Lord's names, like offering prayers to the Lord, offering bhoga to him, bowing down to him, singing some songs for him, reading the scriptures. All this can be done at home, which Ambarish was doing as a king. Such a great Ambarish, once, Prabhupada here is comparing a bhakta and a yogi. So in one of the classes we were discussing about jnani, yogi and a bhakta. Jnani is, anybody knows how a jnani controls his desire? He just suppresses the desires. Because of suppressing the desires, what happens? At one time it will again explode. Like we gave the example of Vishwamitra, we gave. And a yogi, what does a yogi do? Yogi also is like that. They have this yama, niyama, pranayama, asana, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Eight stages they have. So yama, niyama are the do's and don'ts they follow. And pranayama is the breath control. And asana are the yogasanas. And these four comprise the hatha yoga. So when one does hatha yoga, then the senses are supposed to be controlled. If you follow the first of four stages. Yama, niyama, pranayama, asana. But even a hatha yogi, all the time the tiger is moving. You have seen how the tiger moves? He doesn't sit at one place. He keeps moving back and forth, just waiting for opportunity to just, you know, slip off from there. He will keep on biting the rope or something, you know, he will try to escape. And once he escapes, he will just beat the master, you know, kill him and he will run away from there, flee from there. Similarly, the senses of yogi are like that. They are not completely controlled, even after doing yama, niyama, pranayama, asana. Pratyahar means they don't give any ahar to the eyes or the ears or the tongue or anything. Completely they stop, they eat kandamul roots and all that. They don't see beautiful sights, they don't smell beautiful flowers, they don't hear any. So all that they do, yogi also. So yogis are very austere in that respect. Tapasvi is very austere in that respect. But a bhakta, what does Ambarish do? Ambarish was accepting normal prasadam. He was eating just like rice, dal, sabji, chapati, sweet, everything he was eating. So there was no restriction. He didn't have to eat kandamul and all. He didn't have to go to forest also. So this is the bhakta's life. What does a bhakta do? Anything he does, first he gives it to Krishna and then he accepts. He wears a new dress, he gives it in front of God and then he accepts. If he has to eat anything, he offers to God first and then he accepts. If he builds a new house, then he conducts a Harinam Sankirtan in the house, sanctifies the whole place, and then he enters the house and uses the house like that. And he uses his body, his mind, his words, his hard-earned wealth, and all his resources to serve Krishna in the best way possible in his life. He takes whatever is required for himself and then he uses other things in Krishna's service like that. So Ambarish was doing like that. One day the great sage Durvasa came to his court as an uninvited guest. And Ambarish received him very warmly, made him sit. At that time Ambarish was performing Ekadashi Vrat, Upavas, for the benefit of all the citizens. And he told Durvasa Muni, please kindly have a bath in the river and come, and I can offer you prasadam. Durvasa Muni went for bath. In the meantime, he saw the Parana chart. Parana chart is the chart which gives the time for breaking the Ekadashi, about the next day, Dwadashi day. And the time came, and he had to break the fast. And he didn't know what to do. He was asking the Brahmanas, now it's already time, I have to break the fast. So should I eat something? Or should I wait for my guest to come? When a guest comes to your house, he is supposed to serve them first, isn't it? Before one eats. So he was wondering what is to be done. Then after taking good advice, you know, he planned to drink only Charanamrit. Because if you drink Charanamrit, it is considered to be breaking and not breaking both. So by taking Charanamrit, Ekadashi Vrat will be finished. At the same time, he has not offended his guest also. So he accepted. But then Durvasa, who was taking bath by his Jnana Chakshu, he saw that Ambarish is drinking this water. Immediately he came in front of Ambarish. He said, you king, how you have mistreated your guest today. Without feeding your guest, how dare you drank that one sip of water from your hand. Guess see what I am going to do for you. So he plucked some clumps of hair from his head and he threw it to the ground and he spelled a curse upon Ambarish. And then from that clumps of hair, out came a huge monster, very huge. He appeared, he was like fiery, fiery demon. He had hair like brass and he had eyes like copper balls and he was protruding his tongue out and his eyes were so huge and everyone was fleeing in all directions. And he appeared that he is going to gulp down all the directions. It was like that. But Ambarish was not even fearful, even a bit. He was just standing with folded palms thinking that, if Krishna wants to kill me through this demon, who can save me? Let me be killed. And if Krishna wants to protect me, no power under the sun can do anything to me. He was very confident. And instantly this demon was killed by the Lord's chakra. And later on the chakra came, Sarshan chakra of the Lord. That started chasing Durvasa Muni. Because Durvasa Muni offended the Lord's devotee. And Durvasa was fleeing. He even flew in the skies. Surya Chakra was following him there also. He went to Brahma. And Brahma saw Durvasa Muni running and Surya following him. And when he asked Brahma, Brahma said, you know, at the time of Dviparartha, at the end of the Yugas, there is a great pralaya. What can I say? In that pralaya, everyone is finished. And by the flick of the eyes of Vishnu, everything is finished at the time of pralaya. And we are all tiny living entities. We have no power to stand in front of him. And you are asking me to fight with the power of Vishnu. Forget it. You have come to a wrong place, wrong number. No? Move from here. I can't help you. Then he went from there to Kailash. He met Shiva. And Shiva said, myself and Brahma, we all are rotating in this wheel of the material world, thinking that we are the controllers, we are the enjoyers. But actually, we are ourselves under the control of Vishnu. Everything in this world is moving under the power of Vishnu. And I can't do anything with this chakra. You better go to Vishnu and surrender to him only. Then Durvasa went to Vaikuntha directly. And still the chakra was following him there also. And it was burning his back. It was like blazing fire. And he went to Vishnu at last and fell at the feet of Vishnu with folded palms. And he offered prayers to him. And Vishnu, hearing his prayers, smiled and said, my dear great Brahmana, Durvasa, he said many, many, many wonderful verses. He said, Aham Bhakta Paradhino Hyasvatantra Ivadvija Sadhuvir Grastha Hridayo Bhaktair Bhakta Janapriyah. He said, hey Durvasa, he said, Aham Bhakta Paradhino, I am surrendered to my devotees. He said, I am Bhakta Paradhino Hyasvatantra Ivadvija, I have no Svatantrata at all. Sadhuvir Grastha Hridayo, in the heart of my devotee, I am bound by the prema pash, by the love of their devotees, I am bound in their heart. Bhaktair bhakta janapriyah. In fact, not only bhaktas are very dear to me, even the bhaktas of the bhaktas are dear to me. That means those who are helping my devotees and serving my devotees, they are even more dear to me. Rajendra. Mayi nirbhakta hridaya satriya satpatim jata vashe kurvanti mam bhaktya. He said, just as a chaste wife brings her husband, gentle husband, under her control by her innocence, purity and chastity. Actually, this should be noted down by women. These are the three qualities of women which captivate men. Purity, innocence, chastity and what is the third one? Purity and chastity are same actually. There's one more, three qualities. Shyness, correct, yeah, shyness. Shyness, innocence and chastity. These three things. These are actually considered to be ornaments for women. Prabhupada says half-naked women in the street don't derive the respect of any man. But even a shy scavenger, she derives the respect of even very big men, like that he says. So shyness, chastity and innocence, yeah. So Lord says, my devotees are like that woman, like that a wife. And such a wife very easily wins the heart of the husband. A submissive wife can conquer the husband and husband will do whatever she says. But sometimes the wife who is protesting and there is a big fight at home. Both want to show whose ego is big. Isn't it? Just like that I remember this Hanuman's pastime. You know, when Hanuman was going through this ocean to Sri Lanka, you know, there was one Rakshasi. She said, nobody has crossed this ocean without entering my mouth. She said. Hanuman said, what's the problem? I'll enter. So she opened her mouth like this to eat Hanuman. Hanuman became big. And she became opened her mouth even bigger. And Hanuman became very huge. And her mouth opened like this, like earth and sky. Very, very huge. And you know what Hanuman did? He immediately became as small as a mosquito. And he went inside her mouth and he came out. Immediately. And then said, now the job is done now. He said, so you allow me to go ahead. And he went ahead like that. Similarly, the best way to conquer the other person is by becoming humble, like that. So devotees are very humble. Ambarish Maharaj was very humble. So Lord said, my devotees are so gentle, so humble, and they are so constant thinking of me. And just as a wife wins the heart of the husband, in the same way, they have already conquered my hearts. Mayi nirbhadha hridaya satriya satpatimyata vashe kurvanti mam bhaktya sarvatra samdarshana. So Lord is saying like that. So he told, hey Dvija, hey Brahmana, don't even ask me to rescue from this Surya Chakra. I can't do that for you. In fact, I have no power, he said. I can't do it. If you really want to escape from this, better you go to Ambarish Maharaj and fall at his feet, he said. Then he returned to Ambarish at last. Then he came running to Ambarish and fell at his feet. And Ambarish was feeling very shy. So this took 1 year for Durvasa to do all these things. And that 1 year, Ambarish didn't eat anything. He was fasting for that 1 year, you can imagine. Then when he fell at his feet and made him sit, then Ambarish offered prayers to Sudarshan Chakra, glorifying the Sudarshan and requested the Sudarshan to go away from there. Please don't torture this Durvasa Muni. Then the Sudarshan took off from there, went away. And then while eating prasad, the prasad was delicious. Durvasa was very happy. And he was telling Ambarish, Ambarish, I thought the Krishna Bhaktas are ordinary people. Because I thought you are a grihastha and you are an ordinary person. I thought I can play with you. I gave you this curse and I was trying to kill you. Now I understand. Krishna Bhaktas are very powerful. And no one should offend Krishna Bhaktas. And then he thanked him for the prasad. And then he went in the Akashamark singing the glories of Ambarish. So that he can go to the higher planets and tell the glories of Krishna's devotees to others like that. So in this story we see this past time how here is Durvasa and Ambarish. Durvasa is a great mystic yogi who had a lot of powers. And Ambarish is a simple devotee of Krishna. But as Krishna said here, Yukta Asita Matparaha, anyone who fixes his mind on the Lord can easily control his senses. It's very much possible. Because Lord gives him the strength to control his mind and senses. Prabhupada used to say, one devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I feel very angry with many devotees. Prabhupada said, whenever you feel angry, you look at Lord Narsingadev, Prabhupada said. Why? You know Lord Narsingadev? He is anger personified. Lord Narsingadev is killing Hiranyakashipu. So Prabhupada said, if you look at Narsingadev, you will see that, oh, my anger is not that great. He is much more angry than me. Then you will lose your anger. Like that. In this way, the Lord is very great. He can very easily help us to vent all our lower propensities very easily. How a devotee is able to control the senses and why a yogi and jnani is not able to control is very easy to understand. Like a devotee wants to see beauty, but he sees the Lord's beauty. I was telling the last words again, how beautiful is the Lord. His eyes are like lotus petals. His cheeks are shining like emerald. His shark-shaped earrings are reflecting on the cheeks. His teeth are like a row of jasmine buds. So in this way, the Lord's form is extremely beautiful. Kunjavanan is praying a very wonderful prayer. You will all recite. Nama Pankajanabhaya. Nama Pankaja Maline. Nama Pankaja Netraya. Namaste Pankajangraye.
Namaste
Pankajangraye. Very easy prayer. Nama Pankaja Nabhaya. She's telling, my dear Krishna, your nabhi is like a Pankaja. It has a depression like a lotus, and also Lord is called as a Pankaja Nabhi because from his nabhi comes the kamalam in which Brahma is born. And then she says, Nama Pankaja Malina. You are wearing a Pankaja Mala. Pankaja Mala means lotus garland. Nama Pankaja Netraya. Your eyes are like lotus petals. Namaste Pankaja Angraye. Your feet are also like lotus. In this way, the whole Lord's body, whole body is like lotus. So lotus is the softest flower, the most fragrant flower which you can think of. So she is comparing Krishna's body to that. So in this way, a devotee gets the company of the Lord as he goes on chanting his holy names. Like every day we chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we are reciting this mantra every day, half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, depending on one's convenience and availability of time, one chance rounds. Then gradually this material world goes to the background and the Lord's presence can be felt in a more pronounced way. One can see the Lord, one can dance with the Lord, one can play with Him, sing with Him. Lord becomes such a part of one's life. Then one can experience a higher taste by these things. Similarly, a devotee is not just like a markata vairagi, just giving up eating kandamul and all that. Devotees can eat nice foodstuffs. So this is the way devotees purify the food, purify their whole atmosphere. So we should keep our atmosphere at home very sattvic. Satvic atmosphere. What is Satvic? Satvic means cleanliness in everything. Like the things that we eat should be Satvic, like vegetables, fruits, milk, grains and cereals. They are Satvic ahara. And if the atmosphere has to be Satvic, like putting nice pictures like this, Krishna Arjun and Krishna, you know, taking fruits from fruit vendor, Prabhupada, like these pictures, things which will remind us of Krishna when we turn around. Otherwise, sometimes in some houses you see dogs, the biggest dog in America or whatever, or some horses, or some modern art which no one can make out what it is. You know, modern art appears like as if a dog has touched some paint with his, you know, tail and then has put something. Somebody has to come and explain to you. So, we can sanctify the house also. We can make an altar at home like this, like it's made here. You know? We can offer whatever we eat to the Lord first. First, every morning you cook without tasting and you offer it to the Lord first. And then everyone accepts that. In the Vedic tradition, people would first offer it to the Lord, then they would put to the crow also, dog also, cow also, everything. And then they would eat actually. It's a tradition, Vedic tradition. Similarly, one can keep books, spiritual magazines at home. So one can gradually sanctify one's home in such a way that home becomes like a temple. Then our heart also will become like a temple. By making the home into a temple, heart becomes like a temple. Then wife is cooking in the kitchen, hearing some nice bhajans like that. So how Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when I returned home in the evening, he had 13 children, he had. But he had no trouble. Can you imagine? I believe most of you will not believe me, I think. He had 13 children, but he had no problem. You know, people sometimes feel 4 or 5 children to maintain is a big thing. 13 children to maintain, you can imagine, but they were all devotees. So when he came in the evening, he says, my home has turned into a goloka, he says. When I come back in the home in the evening, he was a high court magistrate. When you return in the home, you would see the children playing kartas, mridangam, harikirtan is going on, gaurnatai deities. Everyone is completely absorbed in the Krishna bhajan. So he says, my heart is dancing in great joy when I return home. So in this way, if you make the house Krishnamaya, Krishna Maya means completely spiritual, as Krishna as the center, then our heart will be very, very pure. Like I have seen in my college days, I would go to some boys' rooms to give notebook and take the notebooks. My Lord! People would go inside their rooms with chapels, you know, and it will all be dusty and the walls will be so horrible pictures. So, actually what happens, it depends on the atmosphere also. Atmosphere has a great influence upon us. What you see, what you hear, what you consume, all those things matter a lot. So in this way, we can sanctify the atmosphere. That is Yukta Asita Matpara, taking shelter of Krishna. And in this way, one should engage all one's senses. In Srimad Bhagavatam, with this last point I'll conclude. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, there are some strong statements made in the Bhagavatam regarding one not using one's senses. Yamaraj tells his Yamadutas, those who are devotees of the Lord, never even look at them. Don't even approach them. Because they are beyond this material world. Although they may be wandering here and there, but if you find them, Tilak and Kantimala, not just external, you have to be following all the principles. Then he says that don't even touch them. Because they all are under the jurisdiction of Krishna directly. But he says, there is a very famous verse, he says, Jihvana Bhakti Bhagavat Gunana Madheyam Chetaschana Smarati Tacharana Aravindam Krishnaya No Namati Yachiraye Kadapi Tanana Yadvam Asato Akrita Vishnu Pratyan. He says, Jihvana Bhakti Bhagavat Gunana Madheyam. Those people who are endowed with this tongue, but do not use the tongue for chanting the Lord's names. Number one. Number two, he says, Chetaschana Smarati Tacharana Aravindam. If they're Chetana, they never even once thought of Krishna in their heart. Krishnaya no namati yachira ekadapi vidarsira. They not even once they bow down before Krishna. And those people who catch all of them, Thanana yadvam, bring all those people to me. Akrita Vishnu Krityan, he says. Asato Akrita Vishnu Krityan. These are the people who are against the purpose of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Bring those people to me and they are fit for being punished in hell, he says. So all of us are fortunate to know this fact. What is Yamaraj's mood? Now you understood, many people outside don't know, so you can tell them also when you go. Tell them, this is what Yamaraj is saying. Yamaraj has a list, who can come into Yama's abode? Like that. Also, Bhagavatam says, though the eyes, these eyes are meant for seeing the beauty of Krishna or the Lord. But those people who don't use the eyes for seeing the beauty of the Lord, their eyes are compared to the plumes of a peacock. You have seen the eyes of a peacock? Peacock plumes have got the eyes also, you have seen? Is there any use of the peacock eyes? No, the peacock is having a big, what do you call that? Feather. In the feather there are thousands of eyes, isn't it? But what is the use of that? And you cannot see anything. So these eyes are compared to that. If the eyes are not used for beholding the beautiful deity of the Lord, Bhagavatam says that. Similarly it says, the ears which are not used for hearing the glories of the Lord, they are compared to snake holes. And the tongue which is not used for glorifying the Lord are compared to the tongue of a frog. That frog, you know, trrr, 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 he makes sound, no? And invites the snake to come and eat him. Like that. So why Bhagavatam condemns so strongly? Because these senses have been awarded to us by the Lord only. Lord has awarded these senses to us. What for? Our natural propensity is to love Him and glorify Him. It's very, very natural for us. But in this world, we have come here and we are flattering so many other people. We are glorifying so many other people. Actually, we are supposed to glorify Krishna, the spiritual world. But because we have left that real hero, now we are looking for false heroes in this world. How much you talk about the false heroes and heroines of this world? How long do they last, these people? Famous heroes of my times are gone now. I don't know whether still they are there. Rajinikanth is still there? Now Rajinikanth is replaced by Hrithik or Shahrukh Khan. So many people have replaced, isn't it? So they are gone. I was asking, what happened to Sunil Gavaskar? How many of you heard this name? You heard this name, Sunil Gavaskar? You know it? Yeah, gone. Their days are gone now. Now Tendulkar is famous probably. He's still famous now? Okay, he will be famous sometime. And you will see that after, you just see after 30, 40 years, old order changes, yielding place to new. Muddy other song. You heard the song? Old order changes, yielding place to new. The old things rot away and the new things come up. That's the nature of this world. Everything will go. We have to know that. That's why we have to know why we are born into this world. My eyes are given to me so that I can behold the beauty of Lord, not that I will see bad things and pollute myself. My ears are given to hear the glories of Lord. Similarly, every one of the senses. So hands and legs God has provided so that you can use them in His service. Make a flower garland, make garments, or bow down to Him, fold palms and pray, offer prayers. So in this way, our senses can be spiritualized. Just like iron rod can be put in fire, it can be made fiery, red hot and white hot. Like that our body can be totally spiritualized by utilizing it in this way. You don't have to give up home. You don't have to give up your relatives and friends. See, even a housewife or children or father, mother, old, you know, grandfather, grandmother, anybody can do this. Such a simple process. Just Krishnaize your mind and senses by doing these things. So very simple. Which do you think is simple? Krishnaizing your mind and senses is simple, or going to Himalayas? Yes, Krishnaizing, isn't it? It's a very sweet process also. You don't have to take so much trouble. How many people will be ready now if I come and give class? So I have given a 1 hour class, all of you pack up your baggage now, let's go to Himalayas. Give up your business and jobs and everything. And if you want to achieve liberation, you have to give up everything. How many will come? Probably I'll be the only one walking ahead. Nobody to follow. But Krishnaizing our home, Krishnaizing our mind and this is very easy. With one's husband, wife, children, father, mother, living in a family like this, one can Krishnaize one's life. Very easy, very simple. And this way you will find that you will like it very much when you do this. In your home, you will see that children are very respectful to elders, they are well behaved, they have many good qualities. So in this way we will appreciate also. In this way, we have to understand this two-point formula. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta ajita matparaha. Withdraw your senses from bad things, Krishna says, and you engage them in my service. In this way, you will become freed from all the misgivings of this world and the urges and the vegas, pressures, the pullings. And one can situate oneself in a pure way, even while living in a family. Like this Padma Patram Imambasa, he says, you know, like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. It never touches the lotus leaf. So you will be living in the world, but you are not of this world. It's like living in the spiritual world. Your house will be like a spiritual world. So that is Krishna's formula. By controlling mind and senses, purifying them, and making ourselves eligible to return to God. Hare Krishna.
fact, Shivji, Shankarji, is the biggest devotee of Lord, and he is the first most. I mean, he is the first Vaishnava and topmost devotee of God. He is a materialistic God, right? And he is also entangled in this materialistic, world. And so, how that person or that Lord is, or demigod is the biggest devotee of God? Why not the other devotees?
We all are called as jivatma. Now Shiva is not a jivatma. Shiva doesn't come under jiva tattva. Like you know, Brahma, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, all of them are called as jiva tattvas. We also are jivas. But Shiva is neither Vishnu platform nor in jiva platform, is in between. And he is considered expansion of Krishna. Shiva is a very great position actually. See, when Vishnu does not come in touch with this world, then he is called as Vishnu. But when he comes in touch with this world, he becomes Shiva. He only expands like that. One who doesn't come in touch, he remains Vishnu. When he comes in touch, he becomes Shiva. It's expansion. So, when Krishna expands as Shiva in this way, then his Shakti also expands as Durga, like that. So, Durga controls the material nature, and she is the material nature personified, actually. And Shiva is considered a very, topmost devotee, but he is himself not entangled in this world. He is actually Adipati of Tamaguna, but he is not in Tamaguna. He is Adipati, he is a controller. Just like, if I say so-and-so is the keeper of jail, you say. So he is not a thief. He is keeping the jail. That means he is like the inspector who maintains the jail. So Shiva is like that only. But he externally appears to be in Tamaguna because, he wears all the basma all over his body, puts snakes around and appears unclean with jata and everything, and living in Shmashan like that. Actually, they said that he puts up a particular vesh like this so that he can make friendship with the ghosts and spirits who are in the Shmashan. So he associates with them and they all think he is like our man. They think like that. But then because he is a great Vaishnava, he goes and gives them devotional service. So he offers them all of them bodies so that they can get the next human body and then they can become Krishna's devotees like that. So he puts this kind of vesh to attract them. Yes, otherwise, he is a very great devotee. He is himself not an angle. Even the Mohini Murthy pastime. Mohini Murthy pastime, right? Mohini Murthy is a pastime when Lord Vishnu shows his Mohini form to the Mohini form which appeared during the Samudra Manthan, churning of the milk ocean. So at that time, a beautiful form of Krishna comes as Mohini form, very attractive female form. So when that form was shown, Shiva was chasing that form. She was running ahead and he was chasing and all. So even that is not considered actually a fall down of Lord Shiva. Because that form itself is Sakshat Vishnu form, like that. It's not a Mayaic form. So in the material world, everyone is bewildered by Maya. But Lord Shiva is generally not bewildered by that. But Prabhupada says, because he is in contact with Tamaguna so much, sometimes there is a likelihood that even he may succumb to that. There is a likelihood because he is in contact. But Krishna or Vishnu, they are never in contact. Yeah, they are completely beyond. Clear, it's clear? Anybody else who would like to make a point, who hasn't made a point? I don't want to force anyone. It's free.
The best thing today I like in the topic you told us is your description about Krishna, that it's like his eyes is like a lotus petal. That's the best thing I like. The second thing is self-control. You should have self-control in life. Otherwise, you cannot achieve anything in life. That's
it. Sages would have attained their status as sages only after severe penances, fastings, and one-mindedness on the God, right? But all of them have committed serious blunders, most of which has been invoked by anger or ego. Why is it that even after severe penances, the mind is still not under control?
They are called as jnanis and yogis and bhaktas. You know what is the object of worship of jnanis? Jnanis worship impersonal God. They don't accept any particular form of God. So like bhaktas worship the form of Krishna. But they think God is impersonal. So in Bhagavad Gita 14th chapter, Krishna explains that for bhaktas, I show my real form, personal form. You understand the personal form, no? Like what we have. And for jnanis, Krishna's body has a shining effulgence. Just like this bulb here, the bulb has a form, but it also has effulgence that pervades the whole room, which is impersonal light. So Krishna says, jnanis cannot go beyond the impersonal light. Krishna says that. And they cannot penetrate to the impersonal light and see that personality of God like that. So bhaktas worship the personality of God, whereas jnanis worship the impersonal God. Due to which, the jnanis do not get the support of God directly. You have seen the monkey, monkey's offspring. The offspring has to catch the mother's body. It has to be transported from one place to another, isn't it? Whereas in the case of a kitten, the mother is catching the kitten from one place and she transports it to another place. You have seen that? Similarly, a jnani, he always stands on his own strength. Whereas a bhakta, he always depends on God. So here Krishna says, if you depend on me, then I offer you my strength. Just imagine God's strength, how great it is. And if with God's strength, if one is given protection, one can never fall down. Whereas jnanis, because they are standing on their own strength of their tapobal and other things, because of that they fall from that such a standard. So this is the difference between jnanis and bhaktas. Is that clear, that point clear? Okay. So impersonal worship, if somebody is doing impersonal worship, they are called as a jnani. And in Bhagavatam it is said, in the heart of such jnanis, Lord Rudra resides, it is said. That means, even at the slightest thing, they can become angry because of their tapobal. Sometimes they can become proud of that. See, anyone who becomes proud in any walk of life, they face problems. You know that, isn't it? Like if somebody is wealthy, he becomes very proud of his wealth and he mistreats other people, then he may invite trouble, isn't it? Similarly, these yogis, they are not bhaktas of God directly. They go to Himalayas, they eat kandamol, no? They eat roots and herbs, and they sometimes want to avoid drinking water for long periods of time, and they perform severe penances. But they worship impersonal God. They don't take shelter of Krishna like we are talking about bhaktas. Bhaktas who take shelter of Krishna, they become soft-hearted. They don't become hard-hearted. Whereas these jnanis and yogis, they get a lot of powers, but the heart becomes very hard, like a stone. Although they can do, like Vishwamitra Muni could do Trishanku Swarga, you know. He created a planet of his own, you know, for Trishanku. They have such powers they have. But although they have these powers, their heart is not soft. Their heart is very hard. And because they are not taking shelter of God completely, they can be easily made to slip from that position. It's possible. Whereas our strength, where does it come from? Our strength comes from God's strength. We are actually declaring to God that I have no strength. You are my master. That is the meaning of a bhakta. Bhakta means he's submissive to God. He never thinks I will do aham brahmasmi, you know, that kind of penance. Thinking that I am that Brahman, I am that God, I am that impersonal light. You know? We don't do such a penance. Whereas jnanis do like that. So that means they have to stand on their own strength. So they can't get the help of God. Whereas in bhakta's case, what happens? We get the help of God. So when God's help is there with you, then it is like the whole universe put together, even if it stands against God, it cannot stand. That is power of God. So bhaktas, that's why Prabhupada gives the example in here that bhaktas never fail. Like Ambarish Maharaj never failed. Ambarish Maharaj, even after seeing that demon created, he would have easily protested, right? He would have told Durvasa that, you know, what did I do? I just drank a little bit of Saranamrita. Is it a big fault? I didn't eat any food. I knew that you are my guest, I should feed you first. If you are treating me like this, I will immediately call all my army. You know? He would have called his army and waged a war against Durvasa. He would have done that. He didn't do that. So a devotee of God is very patient and very tolerant and very humble. Like that. And with respect to your general question of why we find in the Shastra so many sages and these people falling and other things, you will find that these are the people who are trying to restrain their senses and mind and then go to higher stage. You know, Shankara says three things are very rare, he says. Three things can be achieved only by the mercy of God. One, he says, the human life, like what we have. Secondly, he says, earnest desire to get out of this world, which is a place of suffering, and go back to God. Second thing he says. Then he says, satsanga, association, to get is very, very rare, he says. So, we all have got a human body and we are getting association. But those people who don't have good association, they try to somehow or other control their senses artificially, and some people leave everything, you know, they go to Himalayas. They have very not so complete understanding about God. They have very half-baked understanding. And they artificially try to restrain their senses and they will eventually fall. Because it is said, when one tries to control mind and senses, the mind and senses drag us down always. Somebody may ask, okay, why not if you simply enjoy the mind and senses? That's what I was telling you. Then it becomes like a endless race. You are going round and round and round and round. There is no end only. You go on. You are increasing suffering like an ocean. So, just like an example, say you have a beard now. Long beard and long hair. So you want to shave it now because it looks very ugly. So what do you need to shave it? You need a blade, isn't it? But if you use the blade to shave your beard, what will happen? That's the likelihood of your cutting. So how many of you feel that because you are afraid of getting cut, that you will never use the blade? Is it possible to avoid using a blade and have a nice shape? Is it possible? Not possible. So you have to take that risk while shaving, but you have to be careful not to get cut. Then we can have a clean shave. In the same way, the spiritual life, we have to take up and follow the principles very faithfully, loyally. And if we do that, then we will completely become pure and we'll become fit to go to God. But if we don't follow the principles strictly, then we may slip and fall down. And it happens to many people. In the early stages of devotional service also, you'll find sometimes people come to classes, they follow the principles for some time, again they go back to all the bad asat sangha again, you know. Because, you know, this is like when you go to a higher platform, you are coming from sinful life to a pure life. You know, you are in between. So the older temptations are not lost. You know, they are still lurking in the heart. And one may succumb to them again. And that's likelihood. So that is the problem these sages are facing, because they don't have a complete understanding and they have a half partial understanding of the absolute truth. That's one reason. And when you try to artificially restrain your senses and mind, then there is no possibility of controlling them for a long time. They will fall back. Whereas bhaktas, even brahmacharis like myself now, we don't artificially repress or suppress our senses. We have such engagement. Like, for example, we sing. So we like music, so we sing the glories of God. Now, if somebody says, Mayavadi says, no, you should not sing tunes because your ears will enjoy them, you know. Then they try to suppress it. So we don't suppress it. We sing, but we sing the glories of Krishna. We see, but we see the beauty of the Lord. We smell, but we smell the flower that is offered to God. We smell it. We eat the food which is offered to Him. So in this way, in the last class we were discussing, I believe you were there, it is easy to replace a bulb having oxygen, you know, with inert gas, rather than to evacuate it. Evacuating is very difficult. Simply becoming desireless is almost an impossibility. Nobody can say, I am free from all desire. But we can replace bad desires by spiritual desires. So devotees, that's what they do. How even children, housewives, everyone is able to practice, because they are replacing bad desires by spiritual desires. Then one's mind and senses become completely controlled, automatically. That is actually the process. It's clear? Yeah. So we will do 2 minutes kirtan.